Welcome to Embracing the Real Podcast. Today we'll be talking about teen self-esteem and confidence. My guest today, my co-host, Dr. Lowly.
Hi, it's lovely to be here with you, Charisse. Hi.
And then Iman, and she's a teen that attends the Villarica High School.
Yes, hi.
Welcome.
Nice to have you with us, Iman.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about you, Iman, so we can give our audience kind of a clear picture of who you are.
I'm 16. I go to Villarica High School, like you said. I really kind of struggled with the self-confidence thing for a while, but I had to find my way kind of with the help of my mom. She struggled the same thing, especially the diversity thing too is a whole the aspect with it. And yeah, it was kind of hard doing the confidence, but I think I found my way a lot, really.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to hear what you have to say, because I know this is a topic that's, you know, near and dear to my heart, and I think that every teenager kind of experiences. So I'm excited to see what we talk about. So can you share a little bit of about your own experience with self-esteem and confidence, kind of like your journey to build that?
Well, in middle school, I came in and I really didn't know anything about what was cool, what was happening, and I was very, innocent, I guess, very childish behind the times, and everyone else was very advanced by that. And I didn't really know, and I spent all of my life, in middle school, sixth grade and stuff like that, trying to fit in, trying to be something I really, really wasn't. And as soon as I understood that, everyone has their different boxes that make a person cool to them. And if I can't, you're not going to possibly fill everyone's box. And if I can fill my own and I can be happy and within myself, that's the most important thing, because whoever else will follow. And then if I don't fill someone's box, and they really weren't meant to be on my journey with me. And when I embraced that part is when I really truly felt happy and successful in my life.
Oh, I love that, your own box. What do you think about that, Dr. Lowly, that statement? I love that.
I think that's really important. And I think, later I'll address, some ways that self-esteem and confidence can be improved. But I think it's really important to look at, what self-confidence feels like. And that's incredibly unique. And, I think being your own box is important. I was sent a meme the other morning that says, you can't change the people around you, but you can change the people around you. And I think that aspect of having the right people with you on your journey and being able to influence who we surround ourselves with and how the people we associate with impact our sense of self-worth and how we feel about ourselves is incredibly important. Mm-hmm. It's an excellent point. And these things are, of course, all very individualistic and, I think everybody is beautifully unique, and as I said, what builds esteem and confidence is, equally personal. And I think that's, an excellent, point to make. So was it really middle school when you struggled the most with self-esteem and confidence challenges?
Yeah, towards the end, I was in a really, really toxic friendship towards the end, because I understood the confidence thing and I came into eighth grade kind of fully confident and on my own. I was in a friendship where I was really controlled. I mean, we were little and we were trying to figure out who we wanted to be and all these different things, especially going into high school. And it was at a point where I was told what I could and couldn't wear, and that was her thing and stuff like that. And I felt like I was, that's when I got bad again, kind of going into ninth grade-ish. I was felt that I was put into this position that I didn't want to be in, that I couldn't fully be myself. And I felt like I was, again, trying to play into a role that I wasn't. And it was hard because I was friends with her for 5 years, and it was very hard to let her go. But I think letting her go was probably the thing that had helped me the absolute most. And my life just was on an improve, incline since then.
What do you think that where you learned, because it seems like you have a lot of insight related to being authentic. So I think a lot of times we're trying to work towards being our authentic self. When I hear you say the box, our own unique box, what do you think some steps that you, took to kind of to realize that and to work towards that?
Well, I knew the people around me, who I was, and that I'm different from everyone else. I've always felt different. I've never felt like I could check off one box. I mean, you look at my college sign-ups or whatever, and I've races, all of the above for me and stuff like that. Like, I can't fit into a box. I've never really fit into one. And a lot of these people at my school kind of had their own niche, like their own clique that they fit into. And I just couldn't simply do that. And I knew that if I was myself, then I don't care who's around me. I don't care if I'm alone, but I'm happy within myself, and no one around me that doesn't like it is going to bring that down. And the people that really agreed with me, like who I was and liked me for not the person I was fitting in to be, but the person I actually was, really were the people that made me happy.
Yeah, sure. Learning to accept yourself at such a young age is wonderful. Can you tell us about the times that when you were struggling? What do you think led into that? Because, you know, what we're seeing a lot, when we're going to talk a lot about social media and the impact it has on our youth. How do you think that plays a role for you in regards to your self-esteem and confidence?
Social media completely plays a role, a huge role, especially with the followers and the like counts and all these different things. It's like, why am I not enough? Recently, I've had a thing happen, and it's really played a toll into who I was. In the past like month or so, I was cheated on, and like it was the first thing that happened was I really didn't think about why I wasn't enough. It was more like what was wrong that caused it to happen. Like, it wasn't like I never thought I wasn't enough, because I feel like a person who could do something like that, a person could hurt someone and stuff like that, is like, it's this problem of their own. And it's like everyone else really around me, if it's like, if I don't have enough like count, if I'm not like this person on social media, and I get that, it's like, you're not enough. You feel like you're not enough to, for millions of people to like your picture, or millions of followers around you. But I mean, you're enough for yourself. And that's what people really don't look at, is like, you're not going to be enough for other people if you're not enough for yourself. If you're not content in your own self, you're not going to get it anywhere else.
That's a quote right there. That is an Instagram quote. Dr. Lowe, tell us a little bit about the research or data that's out there about how social media impacts, you know, our youth, you know, related to self-esteem and self-esteem.
Yeah, I mean, broadly speaking, without going specifically into numbers and individual studies, because it's such a heterogeneous body of data out there, but overwhelmingly, we hear about the negative aspects of social media with regard to mood and esteem. And I think it's really contingent on mindset, is what we're increasingly learning. I think if we are in an emotional place where we're vulnerable to feel down or feel denigrated, or our self-worth is low, then social media and the situations we find ourselves in can exacerbate that, particularly in instances of bullying. I mean, back when I was at school, that everything would be forgotten as you walked out the gates that evening, and it wouldn't follow you home, and you'd have space very much to step off stage and stop playing the role of the student and just be yourself and relax. And now things become, you know, relatively unrelenting for some people who are in negative situations of that nature. But similarly, conversely, there are some really valuable communities online for people who live in places that are less physically well connected or slightly more rural. They can be a much, you know, an important sense of community. I certainly know young people and their families with either medical or psychological challenges have found important sources of community online. So, I mean, it's really very much a mixed bag. My own professional anecdotal observations would be that when people take a break from social media, they are initially annoyed about it. And that is because lots of them are enforced by parents, unfortunately, as a result of this perception that social media can be negative or contributing to psychological distress. But it's bizarre, because people invariably end up being happier. Mm. And it's something that I necessarily can't explain. And obviously, I grew up in a slightly different time where things were a little bit simpler. But but I would say it's certainly complex. And I think, just speaking to, you know, Iman's point, it's really important that we do focus on the aspects of things that we can control. And in addition to, you know, the relationships we have and the friendships we maintain and the people we surround ourselves with. You know, we can't control how much work is coming at you in junior year. You can't control your, you know, your cheer practice schedule or the amount of rules your parents have at home or our ethnicity, background, cultural traditions and how that impacts the world and the milieu we find ourselves in school. But we can control what we eat. We can control how many hours of sleep we get. We can control if we, you know, take some time for mindfulness practices during the day or manage to take a walk or whether we take, you know, 10 minutes out of the day in the morning and wake up slightly earlier to meditate or have some kind of moments for personal reflection. We can probably control whether we do our assignments the day we get them or not. You know, we can control whether we break down things in a, you know, in a one day at a time, one class and assignment at a time approach, or, you know, whether we look at the sum total of everything in our world and just scream. I think that's one of the big things I would say in this, you know, discussion about esteem. I think, you know, looking at the factors that you can control is a big part of it for me.
What are ways that you have in mind, like what he's speaking to, focused on things that you can control as it relates to your building self-esteem and confidence and feeling comfortable in your own skin?
I feel like sometimes you do really have to step back and scream. Like, sometimes a lot of it just becomes so much that it's like you have to give yourself time to heal. Like, fix the problems within yourself before you can move on is a huge thing too. Like, it's not just confidence doesn't come from like a one day realization that you're gonna do better. It comes from looking at everything you have and understanding that it's a lot and you have to try and learn to fix it and get around those things.
I love that. It's more of about, I think, a practice, because even as adults, you know, I think that that's something that we constantly are, you know, it's an evolving process. It's not a destination. So I love that you kind of brought that all together, that it's not one day we wake up and we're confident, but you know, there are people that we see that have that natural exude of confidence, and it's that being authentic to who they are kind of thing. So can you share him on kind of some like strategies or like tips and how, you know, like through your own process, how people can maybe work on that, like that you've been able to do?
Focus on yourself. My biggest problem was I didn't live for myself, I lived for other people. And I think that you just have to really focus on yourself. Like, you can't control, like what you said, the people that are around you, the friends you have, the grades. I mean, you can control the grades you make, but you can't really control like how much is thrown at you. But you can control like how you do with those things, how you are like as a person inside and mentally. You can really step back from it, understand how to take it in, how to fix it, and like not stop what's happening. You can't stop the work, you can't stop the people, you can't stop the bad things that are happening, but you can control yourself and you can better yourself. Mm-hmm. And if you look at these things and you input them in a bettering way, then it would be so much more beneficial than like pitying what is happening, what you're doing, and like what situation you're in, other than trying to fix it and make something happen.
You said focus on yourself. When you say focus on yourself, what does that look like practically? Like, what are things that people can do to help them do that?
For one, I kind of focused on like hobbies I had. I love art. I paint. I hadn't done that in a while because I was so focus on everything else that was happening around me. So I took a step back, kind of painted. I exercised a little bit. I got a job. I got a permit. I still haven't got a license yet, but I got a permit. And like, I just kind of did the things that I had. I put steps out in front of myself, because everything is a lot, but when you break it down and you're like, okay, well, I have to do these things and then I have to do these things, and you just kind of put them in order, take little baby steps.
Like setting goals for yourself and reaching towards them, and building that trust factor.
Yeah, I mean, I would say 100% that's a really sound piece of advice. I think, you know, people say we need better grades. I mean, better grades is not a snap your finger, you know, Mary Poppins style, my goodness, I've now got straight A's. I think if we focus on, okay, you know, I need to bring up, okay, algebra 2 is not great. What can we do with algebra? How can I get extra help with algebra? you know, we're lucky. This is, a great part of the internet. You know, it's full of deviancy and weirdos on one side, but there's great instructional videos that will teach you how to do absolutely anything. And really, if the goal becomes, okay, let's do a bit better in ELA, or let's try and get, this C up to a B. And if any, and over time, if we're making these small adjustments and accumulating small positives and small improvements, and as you said, quite often, Iman, as you were completely right, quite often it's the mental state that needs to, improve first before anything else. And we need, that nice stable foundation of good sleep, some self-compassion, eating the right things, getting into a decent schedule with, a good work-life balance, getting a job, occupying your time so we're not alone with, negative cognitions or, psychological challenges. And I think once we lay a good foundation, then, accumulating these small positives, can happen. And I think it's important that, adopting a growth mindset. It's thinking, okay, I'm not good at math, blanket statement. But you could say I'm not good at math yet. You could say I'm no good at cheerleading, or I'm no good at basketball. You can always add a yet. And if you look at anyone who is wonderful in their field, whatever it is, whether it's sports, art, literature, music, I mean, some people are born with innate talent, of course, but what's common is people try and practice and try and practice and get up every day and do their best and hone their art. And and if you look at the, people of great accomplishment in any field, they don't wake up in the morning saying, I'm going to be the best at what I do. It's going to be, I'm going to have the best practice I can and try my best. And if you connect enough of those, moments together, it's going to be a very much a growth-driven, narrative.
Yeah. I think that's true. I think, one thing that makes me think of, like, cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, we talk a lot about thought work. And so a lot of times self-esteem and confidence is what driven from what we think about ourselves. So, like, how do we find ways to reframe our negative thoughts or the dialogue that we have? Can you talk about a little bit about your experience with that? Like, reframing your beliefs about yourself for making it more positive?
I think you need to allow yourself to grow. You belittle yourself a lot in the day-to-day basis. Like, you're like, I'm not enough, I can't do these things. And the truth is, everyone is enough. Everyone is capable of doing things and accomplishing goals. You just have to let yourself be able to do that. If you continuously tell yourself you're not enough, and that you're not gonna do something enough, or you're not gonna be good at it, then you're gonna believe it. And if you tell yourself that you're going to be able to do something, you're going to be good at it, and you're going to achieve it, it'll be 100% more likely to happen.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. What advice would you give parents about their role in helping to build their child's self-esteem? Both of you,
Ladies first. I wouldn't be a gentleman. I actually have no idea what to say to that. I'm being unfair and mentally regrouping here.
My mom had a huge role in what was happening with my confidence. I would say she's one of those people that are there. She's nurturing for a minute, but then she's also the person that's going to push you to do better. My mom's always been that way. She calls it a tough lover, but she's very much like, get out there and do something about it instead of cribbing and crying in your room. And like, she's definitely helped a lot, because you have to motivate yourself. And having her with me and having her involved and like understanding that I'm it's hurting at a point, like to feel that you're not enough for yourself and to feel like you can't fit into like this box that you're put into. And my mom told me, I remember the first time she ever told me, she was like, you're not enough for these people. And I'm like, that's so mean. And she was like, no, but you're never going to be enough for everyone. And you have to understand that you have to be enough for yourself, and you have to focus on that. And I think that her being there for me, supporting me and trying to help me. I remember in sixth grade when I didn't dress like everybody else, she took me out to go shopping. And I very badly messed that up wearing sandals to school. But like, she tried, and she didn't know at first like where to go with it. But she knew that if she pushed me and supported me and kind of guided me to be myself and be who I better was, then it would be a whole lot easier on myself.
Yeah, so I heard like validating your feelings, your experience, but also mm-hmm. pushing you to step out of that comfort zone to grow mm-hmm. so that you could become fully confident. Because you need those experiences where you kind of have that discomfort to start feeling, you know, yeah. or do things we're not comfortable mm-hmm. doing or trying new things.
Like I couldn't talk to people at all. Like I just didn't, I hated going out and talking to people, ordering food. I have a cat. I had to call the vet to make vet appointments. And I'd always be like, Mom, can you please just call here? And she'd be like, do it yourself. And she'd like, I remember one time she wrote it on a notepad what I should say to the vet because I didn't know what to say. And when I answered the phone and like her kind of helping me in a pushing way, but it was a loving way, like loving, but she didn't really like, is pushing me to do something. It really helped a lot.
What do you think, Dr. Lilly? What do you think parents can do?
I think the vet is wonderful. I wish someone still did that for me for half of my clinic appointments, actually. That would be wonderful. No, I think when it comes to successes, failures, and of course that's an important part of any successful person, anticipation that failure is going to be a part of success, and failures are not failures if we learn from them and move forward. And that's something that's really just important to pause on. I would say for parents, it's important to be encouraging and supportive, but probably from an appropriate distance, and, you know, let the young people in your lives actually grow in a direction that's personal to them. I mean, I have met so many people who are at med school or law school who are there solely because their parents wanted them to be a lawyer or a doctor or a dentist or whatever else. And, you know, I mean, I myself had a father who was a talented sports coach and played lots of sports, and I just wanted to write music. And eventually it took me about a decade to get music instruction. And then I went on to write music professionally and, you know, had a pretty good, you know, career in the industry for a while. But I think that was an example of my father being very loving and very involved, but sort of wanted me to be what he wanted me to be, and really, you know, didn't look at some aspects of my individuality. And I think it's important to highlight for parents to highlight both areas of achievement and areas where improvement is needed. I think lots of parents, quite often people come to clinic because of grades. I mean, grades are, for whatever reason, a good measure of, you know, the psychological well-being of young people for many parents. And maybe it's a feeling of, I must be failing at this parenting thing if my kid is getting straight Fs. And as grades improve and as time improves, and grades do improve with the right conditions. And that's, I think, a really important, you know, real world reflection on this discussion we're having. But I would say parents should give compliments where they're due. I think we are quite often the areas for improvement get overemphasized. And I would actually step back and think, okay, usually there are a myriad of things every day that, you know, our kids and other young people around us do wonderfully well. And it sounds cheesy and silly, but always have 5 minutes to say, I love you and I'm here for you and I support you.
Mm-hmm. So giving that verbal praise. But also I think it's important to cultivate them being proud of yourself. You know, like a lot of times we seek that validation from our parents or our peers or, you know, like social media, but I mean, like you talked about earlier on and on that, you know, knowing that you're enough for yourself, and that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Validating is where a lot of people go wrong, is where I went wrong for one, is because I felt like I couldn't validate myself. I felt like, you know, I wasn't enough for myself, and I try to talk to other people and like get their validation. And a lot of the times I would get hurt because most of the time I wouldn't get the validation because I was very lost in what myself was. And, you know, middle school is hard and trying to fit into like all these different trends and roles. And really, most people don't really exactly know what they're doing themselves. You're not going to get the validation most of the time. You're just going to get hurt. And it's really, the validation doesn't do much for you if it's other people, because again, you're still not enough for yourself. And once you are happy and successful to your own self, even if it's the smallest things that you do, it's like struggling with eating was a thing that happened, and if you ate like you should have that day, is something you should be extremely proud of, and you need to validate that for yourself. And, you know, no one else should, they can validate you, but it won't be the same.
What do you say out there for that teen that's out there that's just, that just feel, doesn't feel they're enough, doesn't feel like they're good enough, and doesn't feel good looking enough, or, you know, what advice do you have for them?
That, I mean, you are. No one is going to tell you enough that you are to make you believe that you are. And once you believe it in your own self, and it's very hard to do that. I know for one that it's extremely hard to, like, everyone tells you, you are enough. Okay, well, how am I enough? How am I enough? How am I good enough for myself in that I can't do this and I can't do that? It's like, I'm enough because... like, you have to understand that in your own, why you are enough. You have to accept, okay, this is who I am. This is who I am, and these are the things I want to change about myself. These are the things that are going to make me happy doing. Like, extracurriculars and stuff like that. It's like, I'm good at this. This is what makes me happy. And if you are happy within yourself, you're going to be happy no matter what, no matter who brings you down. No one's opinion is going to matter, because those people that don't agree with you, don't like who you are, they don't have to be around you. But you have to be around yourself for the rest of your life. These people come and go. These friends, the validation and stuff like that from middle school. I can't tell you one person I'm still friends with from middle school, high school, like barely anybody from even ninth grade I'm friends with. It's something that comes and goes, and you are going to forever be with yourself. You're going to forever be in your mindset. And if you're not happy and healthy in that, it's really not going to.
I love that. The longest relationship we have is with ourselves. And you said that. You're very wise.
Thank you.
Yeah, very wise. I wish I would.
This is like Dalai Lama level stuff.
Yes, I'm like, where have you been?
This is, get her the orange robes. I would just say, you know, a couple of final thoughts from me. I would say, number one, whether you would believe it or not, I have seen a lack of self-confidence and belief in almost any kind of person. I've seen, you know, the football quarterback. I've seen the band folks. I've seen the cheerleaders. Everybody has. It's like the iconic scene in Mean Girls. Close your eyes and raise your hand if you've been called a slut. You know, I mean, everybody's hand shoots up. I mean, I would say a degree of lack of self-confidence is pretty much universal in high school. It's, of course, debilitating to a different extent for different people, of course, but it is something. I mean, people don't watch The Breakfast Club these days. It's an absolute iconic movie for so many reasons. And you guys all have way, way more in common than divides you. And I would say watching that movie with your parents can be something great, because it is just relevant for every generation that goes by. And then I think the final thing I will just say is the safety piece, because we always have to come back to it. There is a difference between a lack of self-belief when you're, you know, trying out for, you know, the school musical that semester versus actually getting to a pathological level where, you know, you really hate yourself, you are profoundly low in mood, nothing in life is enjoyable, or at the most extreme that, you know, you have thoughts of not wanting to be alive or even harming yourself. And, you know, regretfully, with the population I work with, that progression can be gradual, but it certainly can happen. And I think it's, you know, important that at that point, you know, particularly speak with a trusted adult and seek some appropriate professional help. We always have to get the safety piece, you know, out there. And similarly, if you have a friend that's struggling, you know, encourage them to do the same.
Well, as we close, I want to thank you so much, Iman, for sharing your personal story. And thank you again, Dr. Lilly.
Thank you for being with us, Iman.
Thank you for having me.
So mental health is an important part of overall health and well-being. It affects how we think, how we feel, all aspects of our life, and how we handle stress. So if anything that we talked about resonates with you today, or you feel that your anxiety is getting out of the way, where it's impacting your daily life and your activities for several days in a row, do know that Willowbrook Counseling Center in Willowbrook at Tarrant does have a free confidential resource for you, where you can get a free screening at 770-812-9551 to schedule that. Also, I do encourage you to schedule or call your healthcare provider if you also are experiencing high level of symptoms of anxiety or any other symptoms that maybe are distressing to you. Again, I want to thank our panel today, and thank you so much for listening.